I just I'd like to speak on that a couple words. First of all, yes, in many ways we are a very very free society. I mean, this is very true. I mean, for example, if we were living in Chile in the 1970s or in Cambodia under Pol Pot or whatever, we would not be able to have this meeting. And I mean, these are freedoms that we have. But we have to recognize the very important fact that these freedoms were not given to us from above. These freedoms were taken from below. These were freedoms that people fought for. My opinion on it is that if you're not, if you claim that you have a right to something and you're not prepared to defend that right, then it's not your right. Rights that people have is something that they're willing to defend, and I think this is a very important time to do that. And as far as the patriotism notion, there was a quote from a Nazi general who said in the 1930s, I'm paraphrasing, he said something to the effect of, basically you scare the population, and if you want to drive the country to war, you scare the population and then denounce the peace lovers for lack of sufficient patriotism. And I don't think that's the kind of Nazi agenda that I see for a better world.
Great, next question, please. I'd love to speak right into it.
Thanks for coming out, everybody, and sharing your experience. I guess I'd like to have some opinions on, do you think there's any hope for social justice with the current so-called parliamentary democracy? Or does it matter who the bums are, or do we have to restructure the system, create a new system? Can we do it within this system? Can we get justice for everybody and not just the house? Thanks.
I think the question was essentially, is there any prospects for social justice under the parliamentary system that we have at the moment? I could say no and sit down. That would sort of that would do the job, but just to desperately try to elaborate a little bit. I think that it needs to be said that if you look at the political agenda that we're confronting, there are differences between, let's say, the Conservative government of Ontario, the Liberal opposition, and the NDP. It's not possible to say there are no differences, but the framework, the parameters within which they operate, are ones that are not set by them, and essentially are controlled by the very agenda, the global agenda that we've been talking about. The fact is that the Bob Rae government did things that the Davis Tories probably wouldn't have done. If the Liberals or NDP came to power tomorrow, they would seek to cultivate an image of being kinder and gentler, and they may even slow the pace somewhat, at least temporarily, of the assault. But the fundamental agenda would be the same. And if anybody doesn't think that, look at the Blair regime in Britain, which is now doing things that that earlier Conservative governments wouldn't have done. I mean, that's the simple direction. That's the simple truth. So the prevailing agenda is being set outside of Parliament, and it certainly, while they're willing hostages in that sense, the parliamentarians march to the tune and implement that agenda. But more fundamentally than that, the parliamentary system that we have is a system, as they like to refer to it, as representative democracy. In fact, I see the Belleville paper was giving us a lecture on that very subject just a little while ago, of so-called representative democracy, which means a couple of things. First of all, it means that you get to select which particular business-financed set of crooks is going to run the country for the next 4 or 5 years with you having absolutely no say in what happens. That's the limit of the democratic choices. And the second point is that the largest part of the spectrum of people's lives that have an impact on them, economic decisions, are totally outside of the hands of political decision makers and are decided within the corporate boardrooms. So if you were going to have democracy, you would need to have something that was much more participatory in nature. But you would also have to have society itself control the means of producing wealth and distributing income in society for there to be democracy, which would mean the removal of the present economic system. So that's when you had that kind of a democratic society, that's when I think you could start to talk about social justice. So perhaps I should have stuck with the one word response, which was no, but that's what I think. Mm.
Yeah, I'd like to speak about this topic of social justice and reform, and whether we need to completely restructure the system. I mean, we can use words like revolution and restructuring or whatever, or reform within the current system. And I'm speaking from a personal perspective. I myself have worked with the NDP for quite some time, and I'm very happy to have worked with them, because I believe that our vision of a future society cannot be a society that is has say an NDP government or any government, as far as I'm concerned. But at the same time, I mean, there are people suffering in the here and now, and to show complete contempt for their suffering to the one institution that has even the potential of some kind of democratic accountability is ludicrous, in my opinion. I think that we certainly need to work for reforms, but if we limit our sights and limit our scope of vision to those reforms only, then we're not getting very far. And in fact, we don't have very much of a future vision of a society to offer people. Yet at the same time, if we're so focused on that future vision that we ignore the fact that some results can be brought from within a government or whatever in the here and now, whether it's pressuring a government that's in power or choosing to vote at the ballot box or whatever, then we ultimately show contempt for the people who are suffering. And I'm not saying that we all have to participate in that system. I'm just saying that there are different means of struggle, and there's reformism, to be sure, but we can also use reformism as a tool to broaden our vision and to build to something bigger.
Any next question, please? Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to make a couple of comments, I guess, more than anything. We keep bending around this word democracy, and we have these claims that we live in a democracy. But to me, a democracy does not allow, as it has in Kingston in the last 12 months, 279 children to be given up by the parents to CAS because they don't have the housing and they can't feed their bellies. And democracy doesn't allow for a woman phoning me because she has no formula, no diapers, and no check, and democracy isn't waiting till the next election, because that baby and those people can't wait 4 years for the next election. They're going to be dead. And I think the things have gotten out of perspective, and one of the things that we as activists need to do is to reaffirm that if we are going to live in a democracy, then the basic principles of democracy is those people in Queen's Park and Ottawa are elected by us and paid by us, and they are our servants and we are not their damn serfs. And a democracy just does not allow for what I see all around and work with every day through Link. And what I find most frustrating post-September the 11th is you cannot refer to any previous period in history. As an example, you mentioned Hitler. I would suggest to people here, go to the library and take out a 6-part video series on Hitler. It was made in 1981, there is no post-September the 11th bias. And when they're translating Hitler's speeches into English, close your eyes because you're hearing George Bush. Go to your library and take out a video, a single video, called Down and Out in America. It was made in 1985, and listen to the farmers, to the factory workers, and to the people on the streets in New York talking, and that video could have been made today. Because at September the 11th has given the corporate world and the politicians a huge opportunity to be even more venal. So I don't know what question I can dream up out of that. It's just I get so frustrated. And I agree with you. On the one hand, we need to try and get reforms right now to address issues right now. People being evicted, children being given up, poverty, etc., etc. But by golly, we also need, running parallel to that, a long-term vision for, a revolution. And I don't mean the mindless bloodshed that some others have had, but a real directed positive revolution to overturn a system of government and economics that does not work. Good God, are we so dense we can't see? It does not work. It has never worked. Time to change it.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a quick comment here. Wow, I'm up and down here like a yo-yo. Wow, back here a lot. I'd just like to make a quick comment, but first I'd like to do a couple surveys. And we talk about George Bush or Hitler or whatever dictator you want to dream up, whether they're ruled by some vision of race overall or profit overall. I mean, it's still unjust domination. And there are some parallels there, to be sure. But what I would, I'd just like to do a couple of quick surveys. First of all, how many people in this room oppose terrorism? Raise your hands. Okay, now how many people oppose this war? Raise your hands. Wow, I saw some overlap there. I think George Bush isn't looking when he says that you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Obviously, he hasn't actually listened to anyone, and he's trying to push his own totalitarian agenda. And when we talk about a war on terrorism, it's really funny because there have been many military interventions in the past that have been justified on the grounds that the war in Afghanistan has been justified on a twofold base of a war against terrorism and a kind of humanitarian intervention. Adolf Hitler's invasion of the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia was called a humanitarian intervention and counter-terrorism. The invasion of France was called counter-terrorism. The suppression of French resistance movements trying to fight against the Nazis was called counter-terrorism. Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia was called a humanitarian intervention. Japan's invasion of Manchuria was called a humanitarian intervention. So my point is, just because the war is called something doesn't mean it is.
I really appreciate your comment, and it reminded me of a comment that was made by a former Black Panther who visited Canada about a year ago, Lorenzo Kamboa Irwin, and he was talking about this whole idea of reform, you know. And obviously, you know, we need to fight for gains now, and I think the demands of the Common Front are perfectly reasonable. If they were to be undertaken, I think we'd provoke an international crisis, but still. But what he referred to, I mean, reforms as chloroform, you know, that sort of put people to sleep, that's what we're opposed to. But, I mean, he made a comment that I think is the way we should be seeing reforms. And he called reform survival pending revolution. And I think if that's the spirit we take and what we're fighting for, there's really no trade-off between being a reformer and being a revolutionary. They're sort of two sides of the same coin.